This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Health and Living with me, T. Xiaoyik. Today is World Kidney Day. Now, living with kidney disease is extremely challenging for anyone who's been diagnosed with it. The treatment and lifestyle changes that are required for the management of kidney disease can be very difficult for individuals to accept, especially when they feel that they are not able to live their normal lives. So in line with the theme of this year's World Kidney Day, which is living well with kidney disease, I'm speaking today to consultant nephrologist Dr. Shyama Prasad Menon on how to empower people with kidney disease to participate more actively in the management of their condition and ultimately, as the theme suggests, to be able to live well even as you are managing this condition. How are you today, Dr. Prasad?
I'm good, thank you, T.
Dr. Prasad, I think we need a bit of a refresher, a 101, just to remind us about what exactly is kidney disease.
Well, kidney disease refers to any abnormality in the normal performance of the kidneys. Now, kidney disease did not necessarily mean kidney failure alone. Of course, a decrease in the kidney function is, of course, what everyone looks at. But even the presence of, for example, protein in the urine, the presence of blood in the urine or hematuria, all these are considered as markers of kidney disease.
All right, so that's a very broad scope that we're talking about. So if we want to narrow in on what is most relevant and of greatest concern for Malaysians, are there certain types then of kidney conditions that we need to be paying attention to?
Well, first of all, when you talk about kidney disease or kidney injury, as we call it now, there are two types. One is acute kidney injury and one is chronic kidney disease. Now, acute kidney injury is, by definition, an acute disease which is of recent onset, usually caused by an acute or sudden deterioration of kidney function. Now, there can be various causes we can attribute it to, one of which is, of course, certain drugs. There are a lot of drugs like painkillers, certain antibiotics, all which tend to be rather toxic. Some kinds of infection can affect the kidneys and cause the kidney function to deteriorate. Some other intercurrent illness, any condition where the blood pressure drops. You know, when your blood pressure drops, for example, you're in septic shock or in the ICU, you had a heart attack, your blood pressure drops. The body has a defense mechanism whereby it tries to shunt the blood to the brain or the heart, which are considered essential organs. Now, for whatever reason, the kidneys do not come in that category. And therefore, you find that the kidney, the blood is taken away from the kidneys to feed these more important organs, and the patients develop what we call acute kidney injury. Now, once, of course, you correct all the underlying cause and the parameters, the definition here is that the reasoning is that the kidney function can improve and can often come back to normal. Mm-hmm. Chronic kidney disease, on the other hand, as the name suggests, is a chronic condition. It is usually insidious in onset. It doesn't come on like a crash landing thing. It comes on slowly over months, weeks, months, or even years. And usually is not fully reversible. In fact, at advanced stage, it's not reversible at all. And just like a slippery slope, you will slowly slide further and further until you reach what we call end-stage kidney disease.
All right. I understand that whenever we talk about kidney problems, especially in the Malaysian context where we know that it is alarmingly common among Malaysians, we are talking about chronic kidney disease, isn't it?
That's absolutely true.
And the causes for chronic kidney disease?
Well, if you look at the Malaysian or, in fact, Asian population, or even if you look worldwide, the most common cause of chronic kidney disease is diabetes. Now, you all are aware that there's a huge implosion of diabetes in the world, especially in East Asia. We seem to be the epicenter of this. We're talking about India, China, and Southeast Asia. And if you walk into any dialysis unit in Malaysia, almost 60% of the patients on dialysis there are diabetics. Mm. Now, the other causes like hypertension, especially uncontrolled hypertension, there are also various kidney diseases, which we call glomerulonephritis. They were very common, but I think they are minor as compared to the patients with diabetes and hypertension. There are also some hereditary kidney diseases. There are some, but I'm only going to mention polycystic kidney disease, which is a fairly, it's not an uncommon condition. And it's an autosomal disease, autosomal dominant disease, which means that if one of your parents has got carries the gene for polycystic kidney disease, the chance of any offspring to develop the disease is about 50%. Mm. So that's another fairly common cause of chronic kidney disease. And you talked about the prevalence of kidney disease, well. I did not mention also that stones and obstruction can cause kidney disease as well, especially if they're not treated. Stone causing obstruction to the kidney, various cancers, especially of the lower urinary tract from the prostate, etc., causing obstruction can cause damage to both the kidneys. When you talk about chronic kidney disease, the average, as you mentioned, is common. It's about 10 to 11% of the population here. At in our last census, showed were suffering from chronic kidney disease. But that doesn't mean that everybody had stage 5. Some people have very early chronic, but everybody is grouped into the same category. So if you're in a room with 100 people, rest assured there'll be about 10 to 12 people there who have some degree of chronic kidney disease.
Not sure if that's reassuring.
And let's hope it's not you.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? How do we know if we have it? I understand it's insidious. Its symptoms aren't always apparent.
That's absolutely true, T. And that is the reason why things are sometimes diagnosed so late. Now, if you get a heart attack, you get a sudden onset of chest pain, you're sweating, what do? You run to the hospital. On the other hand, if you get a bit of foamy urine, you know, you'd, nothing. And if you're a bit lethargic, a bit tired, oh, I'm under the weather today, you know, things like that, you just tend to pass it off. So when these symptoms are not dramatic, patients tend to ignore them. And to be fair, until the kidney function drops down to about 20-25%, many of the patients are totally asymptomatic unless they go for a regular checkup. And when they do a checkup, they may find that there's something wrong in their blood test, their urine tests are abnormal. And that's when your family doctor or your general practitioner will pick up that something is not right and then refer you or carry out the investigations themselves.
What exactly are we looking for in these annual checkups, in the blood or urine tests?
I think the urine analysis is very, very important. And the presence of any protein or blood in the urine is usually an early marker of kidney disease. There are some kidney diseases where urine analysis may be normal, but if you look at a blood test, you may find that the urea or creatinine, which are marks certain toxins, are high. You may find that certain markers like uric acid are also extremely high. All these things may point and suggest heralds the onset of kidney disease.
All right. You mentioned that there are stages in chronic kidney disease. And, you know, once somebody has been diagnosed with it, it's a slippery slope that eventually progresses to end-stage kidney failure. But is that inevitable?
No, it's not. Firstly, patients with stage 1, as I've mentioned, many patients with stage 1 may have very minor abnormalities. And over the years, if they take care of themselves, if they're risk factors are controlled, if their blood pressure is well controlled, if their cholesterol is well controlled, if they control their diabetes and don't partake of a diet which is unhealthy, they may be able to prolong their kidneys. And I often tell my patients who come to me with a very, very worried look, and after checking them out and looking at their results, I tell them, look, you take care and I guarantee you your kidneys will outlive you. So they look at me a bit, sometimes they're shocked. And I tell them, look, what I'm trying to tell you is that if you take care, you don't have to go on dialysis while you're alive. So you just have to take care.
I mean, that assumption that dialysis is an inevitable endpoint does seem to be something that many Malaysians believe in. And I mean, the Ministry of Health did project that by the year 2040, if we don't manage sort of the risk factors that lead to chronic disease, if we don't manage kidney disease well, something like 100,000 Malaysians could be on dialysis. So I think it's things like this that people think that will be an endpoint regardless of what I have to do. But I wanted to find out from you, perhaps really from a real perspective, you know, if you can share how your patients react when you, or when the GP or when they're referred to you, tell them that they have X amount of kidney function and this is their diagnosis.
Well, I think patients, again, it depends on their personality. Some patients look at it and say, look, okay, this is a challenge that I have to overcome. So they accept the diagnosis and then find out what they can do to fight this and to keep their kidneys going and keep themselves healthy, knowing fully well that if they don't take care, they're not only subjected to dialysis at the end of the tunnel, but they may also die of some cardiovascular disease in the interim period, because the same factors that lead to kidney disease, like diabetes, hypertension, dyslipidemia, which is high cholesterol, etc., are also the same risk factors for cardiovascular disease, that is heart disease, strokes, and so on and so forth. So if the patient accepts this and looks after himself, then you can actually tide them through. And if the patient still has early chronic kidney disease, stage 1 or stage 2, they may remain in stage 2 or maybe deteriorate stage 3 after many, many years. And by the time they reach stage 4, they may be already be 70, 80 years old, and with all the other risk factors, well, they may not ever have to go on dialysis. On the other hand, if they do not, there's another group who do not accept the diagnosis. They become very resigned to their fate. Oh my God, my kidneys are not working. Because there's, as you rightly mentioned, there's been a lot of publicity about kidney disease in the papers, and they say, oh my God, I'm going to dialysis, I'm going to die. I don't know what to do. They become depressed. They don't want to go out anymore. They become a burden to their families. While the other type will say, oh God, it's going to happen anyway. Let me go and enjoy myself. Let me drink. Let me smoke. Let me do everything. I don't care, since it's going to happen anyway. So it all depends on their personalities.
So you really see all sorts, don't you?
Absolutely. We see all sorts. I think any kidney specialist would have seen all these types of patients.
Are you able to say what proportion of patients would we see generally falling into these categories?
I'm happy to say that a large proportion of patients, at least that visit you in a private hospital, because they are very proactive, they come to your private house, they seek your opinion. So these are the people who are sometimes more willing to look what can be done. Doc, you tell me, what can I do? And it's very gratifying to treat them, because at least you know that these people will do their very best, and you are on the same page, and you know whatever you advise, they'll try their best to adhere to therapy, and not like some other patients who feel, what's the point, like, you know?
So with the what's the point patients, how do you approach that?
Well, I think the most important thing here, again, is counseling and education. We have to keep telling them that, look, and it's surprising, some of these patients who say they feel that death is imminent are really not even the worst. Some of them just see what they want to see and say, "Oh God, I'm gone."
So their condition actually isn't that bad.
May not be that bad yet, you know, because the GP has told him, "You better go and see a kidney doctor. You know, your kidney function is not good." They get they just go overboard, and I think they react in a very negative way, even though they may not be the most sick patient that you see.
All right. So, you know, regardless of which, type you may fall under, the fact is managing your kidney disease is quite a long road ahead. It's a long journey. There are certain treatment options available. There are lots of lifestyle modifications as well. So that's something I want to get into with Dr. Prasad when we come back after this break. I'm speaking to Dr. Shyama Prasad Menon, consultant nephrologist, and we are commemorating World Kidney Day today and looking at how to support patients to live well with kidney disease. So we'll be right back on BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Health and Living with me, T. Xiao Ik. I'm speaking today to Dr. Shyama Prasad Menon, consultant nephrologist, and we are observing World Kidney Day today. Now, the theme of World Kidney Day this year is living well with kidney disease. And, you know, we've heard a lot about chronic kidney disease in these times, Dr. Prasad. I think because we have come to realize that they are one of the most high-risk and vulnerable people when it comes to COVID-19, when it comes to the complications of COVID-19. And it's been a bit of a wake-up call, I suppose, if previous experience hasn't already forced people to wake up, because you've already mentioned that chronic kidney disease exists alongside conditions like diabetes, hypertension, high cholesterol, and many patients with chronic disease also succumb to cardiovascular disease, if not the later complications of kidney failure. So it's so imperative that the kidney function is maintained as much as possible. We talked about how patients respond and how they choose to take on their management, how they choose to respond to it. But perhaps we need to take a step back and look at what exactly they need to do in order to treat and manage their kidney condition. So perhaps you could go through the treatment options that you would typically recommend to a patient.
Thank you, T. I think, yes, the treatment options firstly would include control of the underlying cause, namely control of diabetes to make sure that their HbA1c, which is a marker of diabetes control, is well within the normal range. Must make sure that their blood pressures are well controlled, and hypertension, uncontrolled hypertension, is a really major risk factor for deterioration of kidney function. Mm. And of course, as I've mentioned, if there's any obstruction or blockage to the kidney, they should be removed. Now, healthy lifestyle is very important. And I must emphasize here that the patient has to stop smoking. Mm. Now, I've been always questioned by patients, what has smoking got to do with your kidneys? Huh? Okay, you say my lung problem, but I got lung problem, but I don't have. But they don't realize that anything you inhale, the toxins get absorbed through the lungs into the bloodstream and ultimately have to be excreted through the kidneys. So it's ultimately the kidney, which is the excretory organ in the body, that is subjected to all these toxins. And so, yes, stopping smoking is very important, and any guideline on treatment of chronic kidney disease will tell you to stop smoking. Now, we talked about a healthy lifestyle. Now, what do you mean by a healthy lifestyle? Well, diet control is very important, and this is where we find some difficulty in convincing your patients, because the kind of diet they are required to take include mainly a low-salt and a protein-restricted diet. And of course, if they're diabetics, then they should take a sugar-free diet as well. Now, when I talk about protein restriction, I mainly talking about restriction of animal proteins. Mm. So to tell somebody who has been a lifelong meat eater that now they have to cut down their protein and meat intake is quite difficult. I usually start, if they're early, by telling them to cut down on red meat. That's a good start. And if they do that, then slowly I can convince them to start cutting down on white meat or to take only a small portion of white meat, which is allowable. And, you know, we can always work out their formulas like 0.5 to 0.6 milligrams of protein per kilogram body weight of the patient, et cetera, which usually the nephrologist or the dietitian will go through with the patient in great detail. Then we also advise them to do exercises, et cetera, and to make, so in a way, in all, in everything, to maintain a healthy lifestyle. Now, there are some supplements that have been advocated. These include the keto analogs, which are basically a combination of essential amino acids in the keto analog form. And these tablets usually contain some calcium and also some bicarbonate, all of which will combat acidosis. They bring down your phosphates. But let me please be very clear here. Keto analogs are not a treatment for chronic kidney disease. They are useful only in patients who adhere to a low protein diet. If you are going to go out and eat a normal or even a supra-normal protein diet, taking keto analogs is an absolute waste of money because they don't come cheap either. But if you are one of those who can adhere to a very low protein diet, on almost, let's say, 80% vegetarian diet, then these keto analogs are maybe useful supplements.
All right. I'm still trying to understand what exactly is the role that it plays within the dietary restrictions. Does it provide amino acids because you've restricted protein?
Yes, it does. And since analogs come it comes in a keto analog form, the essential amino acids, when you swallow them, it goes to the body and gets, by means of transaminases, and essential amino acids are released. So it helps you to not to get any severe protein malnutrition so that you get all your essential amino acids. As I've mentioned, it's also got some a little bit of alkali in it, which can combat acidosis. It keeps your phosphates down and so on and so forth. But as I said, it's not a cure. We must realize there's no cure as such. And number two, keto analogs don't come very cheap.
Now, I understand there are also certain medications that may be necessary. How do you decide which patients would need these medications? Things like RAS blockers, SGLT2.
Now, RAS blockers, these are the ACE inhibitors and the angiotensin receptor blockers, are actually very, very basic in the treatment of patients with chronic kidney disease. Number one, these drugs, whether the ACE inhibitors or angiotensin receptor blockers, both of which come under the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone system blockers, these drugs will, number one, lower your blood pressure, and number two, reduce the proteinuria. And reducing proteinuria is very, very important for us nephrologists, and also, to be honest, to all the cardiologists, etc., because proteinuria itself is a high risk, makes you at higher risk for getting cardiovascular disease. Now, the SGLT2 inhibitors are actually the new kid on the block, so as to speak. Now, they were originally introduced as anti-diabetic drugs, but recently, studies, including the DAPA CKD study, have shown that they are useful in patients who may not even have diabetes but have chronic kidney disease. It reduces the proteinuria just like they do with the ACE inhibitors and the angiotensin receptor blockers do. And they seem to have a synergistic effect with these drugs. So you can actually add them on. If they're diabetic, so much the better because it also helps to control your diabetes. But as I said, it has been used in non-diabetics, and the incidence of hypoglycemia or low blood sugars is minimal. So they are good drugs to use, but it's something that is now catching on, and more studies are being done. But yes, they will be something that will be more mainstream in the very near future.
All right. I mean, when you talk about these kinds of medications to reduce proteinuria, you also talked about very strict control of the underlying conditions of diabetes or hypertension, if that may be the case. What I'm getting a sense of is it's a whole big package that a patient has to sign on.
Yes.
Lots of medications, lots of dietary restrictions, because it's not just the low salt and protein. It's calorie restriction if you have diabetes.
Yeah.
It's fat control if you have hyperlipidemia. Gosh, that must be so difficult for patients to accept.
Yes, absolutely true. And that's why we get sometimes poor adherence to therapy. Here you are telling the patient, you have to control your diabetes, you have to control your high blood pressure, you have to control, we have to give you drugs to reduce your proteinuria, we have to control your cholesterol. Then the moment your calcium phosphates go into imbalance, you say, okay, this is to control that. And you know, with the chronic kidney disease, there's also some danger to the bone health. So we say, okay, you take some vitamin D. So the pill burden becomes enormous. Mm-hmm. So the patient is here trying to get better. And he says, all I'm doing is taking more and more pills. Mm-hmm. So the pill burden can be annoying to many people, which is, in a way, you can understand fully their sentiment, because who likes to swallow whole? And the funny thing about this, you give them all these drugs, try to explain to them what it's all about. Out they go into the community, and then he comes back to see you the next visit. A month later, you find his blood pressure is very high. And you said, okay, Mr. So-and-so, I have to increase your medication. Then he look at you and he said, it's okay, la, doctor. I said, why? Actually, I didn't take. Why not? Oh, my friend told me, he can spoil your kidney, you know. I said, good grief. I'm a renal physician. I'm a nephrologist. I'm telling you to take this to protect your kidney, and your neighbor or your friend is telling you that it's going. And this, believe you me, is something that we all nephrologists have talked about till the cows come home. And all of us have the same experience. You prescribe a drug, but the patient does not take it because somebody else, most of the time, 99% of the time, a non-medical person will tell you, hey, this one can damage your kidney.
All right.
So this is the kind of misconceptions that we have to deal with.
It's actually no laughing matter, of course, because it will adversely impact on their management. It's just the irony of them not taking kidney-treating medication because it will ruin their kidneys. Now, the other thing is must be traditional medicine or supplements that perhaps well-meaning friends and relatives, again, recommend to them.
Again, very true. This so-called traditional complementary medication are available in the market. So it really surprises all doctors when the medication you prescribe, they reject it in favor of something which they can buy at the Pasar Malam over the counter from a traditional medicine hall, from some Indian Ayurvedic or something practitioner, from some Chinese sensei. And they will swallow these pills, and yet they will not take your tablets. And although you are here telling them, and all they have to do is Google and they can see enough scientific evidence, but many of them have this, especially I would say the ones who are not so well educated, or even the educated ones for that matter, they have this innate fear of Western medication and of big pharma companies. They say, oh, it's the pharma companies are out to get you. The pharma companies are doing that. They're only interested in profits. And these doctors are all in collusion with these pharma companies. Well, I've been told this many a time. Yet, they will go out and buy some of these traditional medication, which, believe you me, is not cheap at all. Yet, they will spend hundreds and sometimes even $1,000 on some of these drugs. And honestly, I'm not going to stand here and say they're all detrimental to your health. Answer is, I don't know. Most of us don't know. But we have seen enough cases where these drugs have caused more problems.
So, you know, I can hear your frustration, but at the same time, you've seen so many of these patients pass through your doors that this is a reality. This is how they feel. This is what they're listening to when they leave your clinic. So what's a practical, sustainable, workable way to help them, to get through to them?
As I said, it still comes down to counseling and education. See, the reason many of them do this is when they come to your clinic to see a nephrologist or a kidney doctor, he tells them this is what you have to do. He does not promise them a cure. On the other hand, you go and take some of these strategies and they promise you a cure. They tell you, look, don't worry. You take my medication, your kidneys will come back to normal. Already you've done an ultrasound or some imaging procedure and seen that the kidney is all shrunken and gone. There's no way. Kidney has no powers of regeneration. It's just like amputating a limb. Don't expect the leg to grow back. Kidney will not grow back. Yet, they live on this. They're clutching at straws. They live on these false promises and they spend money on it.
How do you feel when you lose patients due to poor adherence, when they simply don't go on the treatment and they don't manage?
It is disappointing. You feel sad. But that is the reality of life. You will have to accept that is going to happen. And if you see 100 patients, and if you can get 70 of them to follow exactly what you've done a fabulous job.
I feel like you're trying to say something stronger there. What would you say differentiates patients who have better outcomes from those who don't? What's different about their attitude or perhaps even their support system?
Good. I think it's an excellent question. First of all, how fast or how bad the kidney, how fast it deteriorates, depends a lot on the initial insult and how long before they actually come to see. You see, a lot of patients know at an early stage, look, I've got something kidney, but they feel so fine, they feel so well. They say, oh God, don't tell me I've got to go and see somebody, spend some money there. The fellow doctor will do this test, that test, end up paying a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So they say, no, I don't want. So they stick to it. They consult with Dr. Google or do whatever they want. And it's not a bad thing. There's a lot of information, but there's also a lot of misinformation on the internet. So you do not know how to separate the wheat from the chaff. So you have, unfortunately, these people do not. And when they come to you late, they expect miracles. They expect you to reverse everything. And then you look at their, sometimes they bring the whole bunch of tests and you say, look, Mr. So-and-so, you've had this condition for the last 5 years or 7 years. Why didn't you come then? And they're quite silent or they will give you some very vague excuse. But if you catch them late, it's nothing you can do. However much you try, you're only going to slow down their curve of deterioration by a minimal amount, few percentage points only. If you get them early and if the underlying disease is not so severe, yes, these are the ones you can keep going forever. As I said, they can leave this earth for their heavenly abode with two functioning intact kidneys.
Right. That is very positive, actually. But recognizing, I suppose, that individuals in our society actually, I mean, you already alluded to it. The people around them are a huge influence. So let's flip that around. What can people around them do to encourage them to, manage it better?
Family support is actually very important. And sometimes support from friends and other relatives can also be important. But all you need is one or two people who are negative. Because as I've mentioned, the doctor is probably going to tell you that there is no cure, that it's all a matter of slowing down the progression of the disease. And the patient does not want to hear that. Patient wants to hear what can get me better, what can cure me so that I can go about living a lifestyle that I want to live, not under all sorts of shackles and barnacles and ball and chain on my feet. They want to do what they want to do. And so somebody will come along and promise them. But to educate everybody, now the person who's telling them is probably not going to see a doctor. He thinks he knows everything. But he is the one. So public education across the board is important as well.
Mm.
But that's easy to say, but hard to do.
Yes, absolutely. Is there ever a point where they can go back to their what they think is their ideal normal lifestyle, or is this for life?
If it's chronic kidney disease, I'm sorry to say it is for life. I mean, depending on what is the severity of the initial disease, it may be a very mild control. It doesn't have to be very stringent control. But if you land up and see your doctor with your stage 3 to stage 4 chronic kidney disease, it's going to be a very, very stringent or very, what shall I say, the unforgiving kind of things that you'll be asked to do. If you don't do, there are some patients who will tell, well, looks like, you know, whatever I do, I'm going to end up in dialysis. So I might as well enjoy myself. And then when the time comes, I'll just go on dialysis. We have that types too.
And what's wrong with that attitude?
What is wrong with that attitude is, number one, you don't realize that when your kidney deteriorates, you're also at higher risk for heart disease and cardiovascular disease. So going on dialysis, you will take care of your kidney function. Now, if you think about patient, let's say a 40-year-old man who's now on dialysis, and you have a similar patient of 40 years old not on dialysis, the person who is not on dialysis will definitely live much longer than the person on dialysis. Okay? That is a given.
Mm.
There's no two ways about it. So you don't realize that if you keep yourself going, you can, you know, and not go on to dialysis. Mm. Take care of all your risk factors. It may be difficult. It may not give you the lifestyle you need. But yes, you tend to live longer. You may live to see your children graduate from university. You may see your grandchildren. You may see your grandchildren getting married.
Mm.
That's what you want.
Putting it into context, right? What's really important for each and every one of us. Now, just a final note, Dr. Prasad. With the vaccinations being rolled out for COVID-19, there are a lot of questions about whether people with chronic kidney disease can or should get these vaccines. So what's your advice for kidney patients?
Okay, I'm going to take a little bit of time to answer this question. First of all, in patients with chronic kidney disease, if you get COVID-19 infection, unfortunately, you are at a higher risk. Number one, the kidney function has been known to deteriorate. Number two, because of the infection, because of the the clots tend to form, the increasing incidence of clotting of your blood in patients with COVID-19. And surprisingly, it's also quite common in patients with chronic kidneys, or even more common, unfortunately. So, yes, you want to avoid this at all costs. Do you take the vaccine? Answer is yes. All of you should take the vaccine. Now, my post-transplant patients cannot take certain types of vaccine where they use live attenuated viruses, because that's, for example, the Chinese vaccine, because they're on immunosuppressive drugs and the inactive virus may become active and you can get COVID-19 from your inoculation.
So even the inactivated virus cannot be used?
Cannot be. But the other one, where you use the RNA, mRNA technology, the vector DNA, mm-hmm. Et cetera, they're all absolutely safe.
Mm.
And less to put in context, let me tell you that one of the first persons in UK to get the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine was an 82-year-old dialysis patient.
All right.
From Oxford.
Brilliant. So just to clarify, the inactivated vaccine is not suitable for patients on immunosuppressive therapy.
Drugs. Absolutely.
But that's for transplant patients. Chronic
yes.
kidney disease?
No.
No
they
problem.
Can take. No problem.
All right. So, a final message from you for World Kidney Day?
I think that live healthy, stay healthy, eat healthy, don't smoke, control all the risk factors, and we can help to eradicate kidney disease as much as possible.
All right. Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Dr. Shyama Prasad Menon, consultant nephrologist, about living well with kidney disease in conjunction with World Kidney Day. Today, you've been listening to Health and Living on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.